The Phoenix Suns are the first team in the NBA to 20 wins. We'll break down another home victory, and we'll get to your mailbag questions. Some overflow mailbag questions. You guys sent a bunch of great stuff in, so we'll hit those as well to close the show. All of it coming up right away on Locked On Suns.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen. Covering the Suns the past five seasons as a credentialed media member, thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen every single day. We are on YouTube. We are on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, wherever you listen. The best way to support the show is to do exactly what you are doing, which is to listen. So thank you for doing that. We are doing a giveaway here, and it is this Valley Proud towel. Gonna get to all the Sun stuff in a second, but I have to do this. I have dragged my feet far too long. Let me get my phone out. That's the easiest way to do this. And then I will let you guys know who the winner is. It was lucky number 4 was the person, the number of the person, the number of the receipt, I guess, of the subscription. So I appreciate you guys. Let me see here who sent it in 4th, and I will give it to you. Here we are. It is Caleb Burke at CLBBRK. Caleb Burke on Twitter. Please go ahead and DM me your name. I assume it's Caleb Burke, and your address, and I will get that to you right away. We are marching towards 750 subscribers, people. That is the next number where you can get your own We Are the Valley towel from last year's playoffs. Another giveaway. Look, I'm trying to get us there, trying to get us over the hump to 1,000, where then Kelly Oubre gets involved. And that will be the main prize. I'm not saying that'll be the last one, but 1,000 is obviously a big one on YouTube. It allows us to start getting some money out of this arrangement. And I've been doing it for several months now, so I'm not going to lie. I would like it. It could be a good 2022 send-off gift here as we start the new year. But let's get right to it. Chris Paul, the point guard, closing the game again for the Suns. Feels like deja vu. Feels like a rerun of the same episode we have seen so many nights this season. It was almost a month or more ago now, of Chris Paul's 100th game in a Suns uniform. All of them pretty much have come in the year 2021, and we are in no short supply of more to come here. 21-10. If you have not guessed it, yes, that is my main takeaway here in this game. Chris Paul, look, this is a familiar pattern for the Suns, 108-104, but should not have been that close ever. The Spurs made a ton of threes in the first. Okay, they were winning. They were winners of 4 straight coming into this game, so I will give that caveat. But they made every three they took, it felt like, in that first quarter. So they got up to a 33-26 lead. But then over the next two quarters, the Suns held them to just 37 points, outscored them by nearly 20, and took a commanding double-digit lead. Unfortunately, those shots started to fall again in the fourth quarter. Both Doug McDermott, Lonnie Walker, Bryn Forbes, although Bryn Forbes had a weird night where none of his shots effectively came from three, only two of them did, and he took 11 two-pointers, which is not Bryn Forbes' game, but somehow it was working, and the Spurs put it right back to the Suns. I believe the game was tied at 88 after the Suns had led for a long, long time. But that's where Paul came in, swooped in, saved the day, had a big game-changing chase down block slash steal. It got registered as a block. He and Cam Johnson both agreed that it would be much nicer to register as a steal to pad those stats, keep him in the leaderboards there, but saves a play against the incredibly athletic DeJounte Murray, knocks it off of Murray, it goes out of bounds, makes multiple of his, you know, typical uncanny mid-range jumpers. One was a kick out off of a DeAndre Ayton kind of post-up, if I'm remembering correctly, or maybe it was a Mikal Bridges drive. I don't remember exactly. He made a three off of that. He also made a three on a switch against, I believe, Jakob Poeltl late in the game. And it was just a vintage type of night for him. I mean, I keep saying vintage. It's probably unfair to him. It makes him sound like he's on the back nine of his career, which I guess he is, but it certainly doesn't feel like he's slowed down anymore. And that's the last point I wanted to make because, you know, we see Chris Paul every night, but it's not all the time that I sit here and really talk about him. And I wanted to keep the thread of a show I did a bit ago, some of my takeaways from, I believe it was when the streak got to like 15 or 16. In that show, the takeaway was basically we know what it'll look like for Chris Paul to age. And I will say, I think through the first half, he was, you know, around 5 shot attempts. So it looked very much like that in this game. And what I said was, you know, typically John Stockton, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, these types of guys, they get to this point where their assist rate really balloons. They really, you know, gravitate toward playmaking. Their, you know, overall scoring numbers go down. Their defensive metrics might go down, or how they play defense might change a little bit. Maybe they're more of a team defender rather than a non-ball defender. And last but not least, their three-point rate tends to go up, which we actually really haven't quite seen with Chris Paul a whole ton, but you know, his season was following that trajectory. What I will say, though, is this type of game, 35 minutes, 21 and 10, like I said, the game-changing, game-saving, in some ways, defensive play late on DeJounte, that solidifies what I think separates Paul from the rest of that pack. And I think when it's all said and done, whether he gets that title or not, we don't know what's going to happen. He is better than that group of players in large part because he has that other gear, right? He has that something in him where, you know, he's more athletic than those guys, even, you know, even in his later stages. So I'm sure that helps. But he is a better and more aggressive scorer, I think, when he wants to be. He has, you know, more in his bag. He has that athleticism in him, and, you know, he's at least as good of a shooter as all of that group, you know, probably a lot closer to Nash than the other guys. And so, you know, I think that it's worth remembering. It feels like we have kind of graduated to this new phase for Paul, but it's not that long ago whatsoever. Talking about how most of those games came in 2021, that should show you it was not that long ago that this guy was closing out on the road his former team in basically what amounts to a rivalry game in the conference finals with 41 points. 41 points. So, you know, not to say that this measly 21 and 10 against San Antonio and at home on a Monday night in December is comparable to anything that he did in the conference finals, but it's not gone. And he can meld those two where he can age, he can adjust his game to account for his aging, but he still has that late game magic, that athletic burst, that scoring flurry that the Suns are going to need. And I'm sure we'll see more nights like this while Devin Booker remains out. A few more things I want to get to from this game. I want to talk a little bit about Jay Crowder's comments post-game and Cameron Johnson and the rotation and some of that stuff. And then, of course, your questions. We'll get to as many as we possibly can. Might even start them in the next segment, but I'll definitely get to them in the final segment for sure. First, though, a quick word from Truebill. You know what Truebill does. It saves you money. Free trials constantly getting renewed all across the world without our consent. You sign up once, you forget to cancel, or you don't even realize that it ever is going to become paid, and then all of a sudden something's getting trickled out of your bank account month in and month out. Truebill solves all that. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or maybe just forgot about. People on average save up to $720 per year when they use Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill flips it on its head, makes it incredibly simple for you. Just link your accounts, and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. I'm running with it. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and help them save over $100 million. So don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now, Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands per year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Today's show also brought to you by Theragun, the Theragun Gen 4, of course, the much beloved latest Theragun product. So don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or someone just like me trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power, all in a package as quiet as an electric toothbrush. Then the Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good, it goes directly to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than just vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out an injury or, again, just those regular day-to-day stresses, there's no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid, elite athletes like the Valley's own DeAndre Hopkins, hundreds of thousands of customers around the world. So try Theragun for 30 days starting at only $199. Go to Therabody.com/LockedOn right now to get your Gen 4 Theragun. That's Therabody.com/LockedOn. Therabody.com/LockedOn. Couple more thoughts here. I will get to your questions too. Bigger picture, because you guys had such good ones, and a lot of the time I'm a little bit nervous and I don't always like to, really zoom out, but there were good ones. So I do want to answer some of them. But first, a quick few last thoughts here on this win over the Spurs. First of all, Jay Crowder. I thought it was interesting. You know, he has clearly been taking a few more of the in-between shots this season. You know, he's always been sort of a threes-only type of guy for the most part, but that has started to slowly change. And he was asked about, you know, he made a floater late in the game, and Kellen Olsen asked him from Arizona Sports, like, is that something you've really been trying to do? Is that just happened in the course of the game? Like, what's to blame, or what's the cause of that? And he said, you know, I've really been trying to do that. And the most interesting part of the quote was Crowder said, that's a playoff shot. And I just, you know, it kind of reminded me of like the Draymond Green, there's 82 game players and there's 16 game players. I guess this was Jay's way of saying there's 82 game shots and then there's 62 game shots, and that, you know, somewhat contested three that's there in the regular season, maybe that's not quite going to be like open to the same degree that it is in the regular season when the playoffs hit. And I thought that was just an interesting way for him to put that. The numbers here very much back it up. So last season, first year in Phoenix, actually it might even be more interesting to start with the Heat year. So when he was with the Heat for the second half of 2019-2020 and into the bubble, only 6% of his total field goal attempts were from deep. Last season, first year in Phoenix, that went up to 15%, or I'm sorry, were from mid-range. Only 6% of his shots with the Heat were from mid-range. Last season, 15% were from mid-range, still very much in the bottom third of the NBA among forwards. This season, though, 25% of his shots are from mid-range, which puts him in the top half of the NBA. And then long mid-range, which are, you know, some of those floaters or potentially a mid-range shot that is supposed to be a three and you either step in or you take your foot's on the line or whatever, that's 11% of his total shots this season, which is 74th percentile. So basically the top quarter of the NBA. It's just interesting to look at and think about, because, you know, I'm not saying that that's going to suddenly become a really major part of the Suns offense, but Crowder, I'm remembering the stretch now, it was not at the end of the game, it was to start that third quarter. I believe Crowder had 8 or 10 of the Suns' points to start off that third quarter, and a lot of them were coming from inside. He got a nice layup, he had one of those floaters, and then I think he hit a couple threes. And, you know, of course they're not going to start necessarily running offense for him to do that, but the Suns don't really, like, run a lot of sophisticated offense in the first place in terms of long extended sets. What they really do is they initiate an action and then guys just play off of that. And so having those other types of shots at your disposal when the flow of the offense is getting, you those looks is useful. It's obviously very helpful. And so I thought that was interesting to hear that kind of not only that Crowder was really conscious of that, but specifically how he was thinking about it and the fact that he had the playoffs in mind. I mean, he is a player who makes an annual trip to the playoffs at this point, so not a surprise, and it may be, but interesting nevertheless. Lastly, with that, though, Cam Johnson played 29 minutes. Interested to see how he continues to get to the free throw line. There was a lot of talk from Monty. Kellen Olsen touched on this in his story. It was, you know, clear from a couple of the very strong drives to the basket that Cam had in this game that he is kind of getting more comfortable with that part. So will he be able to get to the free throw line a little bit more? Will he get some of that respect? Does his comfort help him, boost him in a way that he starts taking more of those driving layup type shots? I think all of that is very much open for, not discussion, doesn't matter what we say. It's open to him to take advantage of. So I'm curious there. But the main ingredient of the game tonight for him was the minutes. And he continues to be the main bench minute guy, especially while Booker's been out. But in general, even prior to that, you see a lot of games where Cam Johnson and Jay Crowder play effectively equal minutes. You know, maybe Crowder is a couple minutes ahead, but that started to be tighter and tighter. I've talked about this before where there was a game a couple games ago. I think it was the Pistons game where Cam closed over Jay. And so I don't think that's the last of that we're going to see. And I think Imani's increasingly comfortable kind of, you know, mixing and matching those lineups. I asked Cam about just, you know, sort of conditioning and comfort level, considering there was the shutdown when he was a rookie and then the bubble, and then he had COVID and the injury last season and all of that type of thing. And he was a little bit, he's a humble dude. He's not always going to be the one to kind of puff himself up, but you know, he admitted that it's nice to just be able to get into that rhythm. So all those things to me could coalesce into a more trusted version of Cam Johnson, somebody who can do more things for you out there and then in turn is able to earn the trust of the coaching staff. So just a last few positive kind of takeaways from this game. I'll answer all of the questions I can get to in 10 seconds or less. No, I mean 10 minutes or less in the last segment here. But let's take one more quick break to hear from Boost Mobile, a new sponsor for the show, but everybody knows Boost Mobile. You listen to podcasts for the power of knowledge. You switch to Boost Mobile for the power of saving money, because with Boost, you get the power of a free 5G phone so you can listen to all of your latest favorite episodes, the power of 3 unlimited data lines for $30 a month per line so your family can harness all the brain power as well, and the power of one of America's largest 5G networks so you can do all of it at the speed of 5G. With all that money you'll save and all that knowledge you'll gain, just how powerful will you become? Switch to Boost Mobile and find out. Get a free Samsung Galaxy A32 5G when you switch to one of America's largest 5G networks. More power to save. Boost Mobile. Disclaimer, free phone limited to new customers and one per line. Additional restrictions apply. Offers and coverage not available everywhere for all phones and networks. See boostmobile.com for details. Okay. Your questions answered. I had a few left over, so I did not want to miss out on them. Here's the one that I'm going to start with. Again, this is courtesy of the Suns subreddit. A lot of engagement on that post, a lot of upvotes, more than I've ever had on these before, so I appreciate you guys. Hopefully you are finding me for the first time, or maybe you just felt like you really wanted to ask your question this time. Whatever it might be, do appreciate it. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen every day. But this user, Nemo Carrasco, actually is not, maybe I'm not always the first listener. Maybe I'm sometimes the second, because he listens to Locked On Cardinals as well. So I will be stealing this bit from those folks, Alex and Bo over there. They asked the question, who's more likely to win the championship this year, the Suns or the Cardinals? And it's a fair question. It's an interesting question. I love to do the kind of book versus Kyler thing, and I think it's still pretty close, but I think you have to give Kyler the advantage at this point, mostly just because of how important the quarterback position is. And that leads me to my answer for this too, and I actually think I have to agree with the Cardinals guys, and they were really, you know, I guess sort of genuine about their answer. They were not just being homers, although Nemo, you make it sound like they were. They were, I think they were right on, not only because of, like you say here, that they only have a few games, right? I mean, it's like if they get the bye, it's three games to win a Super Bowl, right? And then only two to get to it. But I also think it's because Kyler Murray is so impactful. If you have an elite quarterback, there's really no better chance, there's no better path toward a title in any sport than having an elite NFL quarterback. And so I still would default there. But I will actually add, and this is something I'm going to talk about later in the week with Jackson Frank, checking back in on our sort of Western Conference tiers, is the West looks bleak right now. Because the Nuggets, not only do we not know about Jamal Murray, but now they have this Michael Porter Jr. thing, and PJ Dozier, who's like, you know, their ninth guy, he's also out. And that doesn't look good. The Clippers, we don't know about what's going on with Kawhi still. The Lakers have been horrible. The Blazers are imploding. The Mavericks look basically the same, you know, a little bit above average, and that's about it. And then you have the Jazz, who are predictably good, and they're going to be an interesting test if the Suns face them in the playoffs. And then the Warriors, who we've been talking about nonstop. So I think that version, getting back to the finals, I don't think last year was a fluke for the Suns. I think the West might just be in a weird spot. And so that pathway is a little bit easier than the Cardinals, who might have to go through the Bucks and the Cowboys and this and that, and a pretty stacked NFC. So hopefully that answers your question. Have one more here on the big picture stuff. Whew, there are so many. Thank you guys so much. Okay, here's the one I want to go with. Air Alex 28 actually already answered your question. You said, where would you rank this team in Suns all-time greatest? I think it's right there at the top. I think you have to have 92, 93 at the top. I think that that will always be at the top. I think you probably put last year's team just below that, because I think making the finals is pretty impressive. If you have a pretty good regular season and you're able to make the finals, that really says something. I don't necessarily put the 75-76 team on the same pedestal, mostly because their regular season, I think they were just above 500, so I don't think that's quite the same. And I think, so then I would have third probably 06-07, but that's mostly just because we already know how that one ended. So I think the Sun season this year, this current Sun season, is at least neck and neck with 06-07 for that third spot. And if they are able to win the title, of course it would be the best ever. So we're in uncharted territory to a degree here. We're in at least hallowed territory where only a few Suns teams have ever gotten, and the streak was just one part of that. So I did answer, but hopefully that sums it up a little bit. The other one that interested me that I wanted to really get to is from user Duarte2151 on the Sun subreddit. He said, how long will this dynasty that is currently in its infancy last? Very interesting question. Probably, you know, I think you kind of want to like knock on some wood when you do a thing like this. So it sounds like a very perfect August podcast based on how this season ends, when free agency and all the other stuff quiets down, really just having some fun. What I will say is sort of the stock up and stock down aspects of this, I think you could look at since the beginning of the season. The biggest stock up, the biggest reason to be optimistic answering this question, that it will really be something of a dynasty, or I don't know about a dynasty, because that means you're winning multiple championships in a span of a few years, but I think a period of prolonged championship contention is definitely here. The stock up for that, post Chris Paul, or sort of whatever it's going to look like in the next few years, is that the system is really unveiling itself as the star of this team. And I think as long as you trust that system to maintain, and Monty Williams is not going anywhere, he's proven that he can hire a good staff and keep the guys engaged and bought in and all that stuff. If that's all going to stick in place, and you trust that James Jones can identify talent and keep it and find guys who fit into that system and empower them, then, you know, that leads you to believe that that's going to continue for quite a long time, right? So obviously the tip of the spear of that system is always going to be Chris Paul. There's a reason that, you know, Goran Dragic did not just, you know, take Amari Stoudemire and whomever into the promised land, and things kind of dissolved once Steve Nash got to the end. Maybe they could have handled that transition better, but there's only so many guys who can do what Steve Nash did. And likewise, there's only so many guys who can do what Chris Paul did. Which brings me to the one stock down on that dynasty front. I think a quiet and subtle subplot of this season was, what does Cameron Payne look like? Can he continue to string together these great months and great seasons out of nowhere after almost having his career end? That's been a little bit dicier. I think he's been, relatively speaking, obviously expectations were high, and, you know, it's one thing to maintain, it's another thing to improve. So if your goal is to improve, or if your expectation is that somebody improves and they don't, then it's going to be a little bit bad, even if they look the same as they did. But I think, you know, his shooting has been a little bit less consistent this year. He doesn't seem to... The defense that I think I may be overhyped at times last season hasn't always been there. Basically, point being, I think there's a more considerable drop-off from Chris Paul to Cameron Payne whenever that drop-off happens than I might have been giving credit for. And so that probably is a little bit of a downtick if you're looking at trying to think of something like a dynasty. So hopefully that answers your question. I think that was good stuff. Dro Mora is where I will close. User Dro underscore Mora on Suns subreddit. How far do you see the Suns going this season? That is a very good question. I think that they're going to make the conference finals right now, because I don't think the Jazz... I wasn't really that worried about that matchup. I would have favored the Suns in that matchup last season. I think the Suns have gotten better. I don't really know that the Jazz have gotten better. You know, they're still figuring themselves out in terms of integrating Rudy Gay. How big of an impact does that make? Do they have a trade to make? I still think that Joe Ingles' contract is tradable if they really wanted to do something crazy. How healthy is Mike Conley going to be at this age? I'm not really worried about them still in their current form. And then the Warriors, I would think, would probably be, you know, top... that they're going to be the top two seeds, and then that would be a conference finals matchup. I don't think anybody at the bottom of the West looks anywhere near scary right now. I think the Suns should be favored in terms of IQ and home court advantage and all that stuff in any of those series, and I think that they would have a pretty easy time getting through whoever they face in the second round. I mean, Utah would be a pretty tight test, but the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Mavs, none of those teams are really that scary right now. So I think that's probably the most likely. And then, you know, can you beat the Warriors? How does Klay look? What does that look like? Can you stay healthy? Who do you face in the finals if you get there again? But that's the level that we're talking about, and I think you guys should be really optimistic. I am too. We will break it all down throughout the week. We have this weird week now. This is the only game recap show we will have this week, because the Suns don't play again until Friday, and I don't record on Friday nights. So plenty of big picture conversations. Dwayne Rankin will be on this week. Jackson Frank will be on this week. I will be doing a quarterly player grade show on Wednesday. So all of that to come. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen every day, and we'll be back for you tomorrow.